Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc. The film, Beasts of the Southern Wild, released last year, stars Quvenzhané Wallace as Hush Puppy, a young girl living in a southern Louisiana bayou with her father and with the weight of the universe on her small, determined shoulders. The film was directed by Ben Zeitlin and adapted by Zeitlin and Lucy Alibar from Alibar's one-act play, Juicy and Delicious. The score is by Zeitlin and Dan Romer.
One day, the storm's gonna blow, the ground's gonna sink, and the water's gonna rise up so high, there ain't gonna be no bathtub, just a whole bunch of water.
This gorgeous and fantastical film was distributed by Fox Searchlight Pictures and was nominated for 4 Academy Awards. The film's star, the aforementioned Quvenzhané Wallace, is the youngest person ever to be nominated for Best Actress in a Motion Picture. Zeitlin was nominated for Best Director for this, his first full-length feature film, and he and Alibar were nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay. The film was nominated for Best Picture. This Saturday, August 10th, Mass MoCA in North Adams, Massachusetts, will present a screening of Beast of the Southern Wild with live score performed by Dan Romer, Ben Zeitlin, and the Wordless Music Orchestra. This is one of only 2 scheduled live score presentations of Beasts, the first occurring on the 8th at Celebrate Brooklyn in Prospect Park. Filmmaker Ben Zeitlin joins us now. Ben Zeitlin, welcome to the Roundtable.
Hey, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, and I can't tell you how excited I am to speak with you today.
Oh, thank you.
Let's talk about the score to the film, the live score, first.
Yeah.
Where did the idea come from to screen the film with live scoring?
Well, it's something I sort of always have wanted to do since my very early short films, just because, I write the music for the films with my co-composer, Dan Romer, and it's a much more active score than I think you probably normally see in films, and it's really kind of its own creature inside of the film, and so we always thought that getting the chance to actually play that music live and have that be a spontaneous, visceral experience would add another layer to the way the film feels. And so this is kind of a long-standing dream that's going to come true.
Like you said, you co-composed the music with Dan Romer. How did you and Dan meet and begin working together?
We've been working together really since my first short film that he was the recordist for, and we knew each other through a bunch of different ways, but I think me and Dan sort of met and saw another person who liked to work as hard as the other one did, and that is very rare. And so we just, from the first moment we started working together, we just got into doing 22-hour days and just going crazy writing music and recording it, and pretty much since that moment, which was maybe in 2005, we've worked on everything ever since together.
It's not completely unique, but it is quite rare to be a filmmaker, writer, director, and the composer of the music for your films. How is writing scripts, creating stories, and directing different than writing music, composing music? And does it fulfill different parts of your artistic need?
When you're writing it for a film, it really feels the same to me. I mean, I sort of started as a musician and moved into film, but a lot of times the germination of the story or that first seed will come from a piece of music rather than anywhere else. I'll start hearing a song, I'll hear some words, and that'll become the idea for a film. And so the two things for me, I don't think I would know how to make a film if I wasn't also writing the music. So it's very intertwined, but it certainly, to me, is almost the most visceral part of creating an emotional world in a film. And the score in Beasts and all my films really always comes from the most intangible and the most kind of emotional place in the story. And so, a lot of times when you're writing a script, you're almost leaving out, people aren't going to talk directly about what they're feeling or about their imagination or about their dreams, because that's where the music has to kind of communicate outside of the words. And so it is a very special part of the whole picture, but it would be hard for me to split them up and say, one's one thing and one's the other, because they all feel very mixed together.
You mentioned that you live in New Orleans, and Beasts of the Southern Wild is, of course, set in New Orleans, but you're from the Northeast originally, from New York City, and went to school in Connecticut. What brought you down to New Orleans initially?
My parents brought me down to New Orleans when I was a kid. because we would sort of drive all over the country. I think from the moment I went there, I was probably 13, 14 years old. I started talking to people, saying that I was going to move to New Orleans as soon as I got the chance. And, it's a very haunting city, and it can kind of get under your skin and draw you back into it. And so pretty much as soon as I could, after I got out of school, I just kind of went down there, and it just became all the sort of ways that I wanted to make art films and make art and just live in general just were so in sync with the way that city, you know, exists and lives that it wasn't even a question that, you know, it just felt like the natural place to do my work.
And the ways that you want to create art and the ways that New Orleans supports that is sort of a collective kind of community-based form of filmmaking, right?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, it's a great place. You know, we've had a lot of great collaborators down there. You know, there's just a very wild, community that is around the celebration culture down in New Orleans and around the art culture. And it, you know, it all kind of blends together. And, you know, I think one of the things that really made me love it and drew me to it is that, you know, everything in New Orleans is kind of done for its own sake. And it's sort of, you know, it's sort of always for pleasure. You know, it's not it doesn't feel like you're in an industry trying to make it as an artist. It feels like people do things for the love of it and to enjoy them. And that was something that I was really looking for. And New Orleans definitely has.
When your first major project receives such positive attention from critics, awards organizations, and of course, audiences, does that put pressure on you for the next thing you work on? Or do you feel any different as an artist now that you've been acclaimed for your small, beautiful film?
Not that different. I mean, certainly not. It doesn't, I mean, there's so much, you know, you kind of put so much internal pressure on yourself, to always make something better, you know, to, you know, push yourself further, do better work, you know, impress yourself, you know, and just feel like you're growing, you know. The outside world doesn't necessarily change that, but it is a really great feeling knowing that you're making your next, you know, making my next film, writing my next film. I get to sort of make that knowing that people are going to see it, and that's a big difference from Beast, which, you know, I think we probably imagined that we would be driving around in a truck projecting it on the sides of community centers or something. So that feeling definitely is a good one, but I don't know that it changes your relationship with the work.
You mentioned a few minutes ago that you started in music and moved to filmmaking. How did that transition happen? When did you discover that you wanted to pursue filmmaking? Not that you've left music entirely behind, of course.
I think part of what drew me to film was that music could be a component of it. You know, I didn't really want to be in a band and live on the road and do that sort of like touring lifestyle. And film has this really wonderful quality where you can kind of design your own reality instead of fitting into something else. You know, you can write a world, say it's going to be in this place. We're going to shoot it in this place. I'm going to get all my friends together and we're going to go on this adventure that I made up, you know, and you actually get to go live that. And so something about that adventure mentality, drew me to film and knowing that I would find a way to continue writing music as part of that, you know, never made it feel like, oh, I'm going to drop music and start making movies. It felt like I can expand what this music is and what it does and use it as part of a even more complicated language.
And how do you compose music? You play the banjo, right? Do you play other instruments too?
I play guitar and I sort of mess around on piano and play the drums. But I'm a terrible musician, actually. Dan Romer, my co-composer, is a musical genius and it wouldn't happen without him. But you know, for me, it's more, I can kind of hear it. I hear the melody, I hear the chords, and I can fudge around enough to explain to Dan what I'm hearing. And then he can kind of take that and jump off from it and write things that go alongside it and expand it out into what it ends up being. But I'm more of a songwriter than a composer. But together we managed to kind of, you know, take these very kind of pop-oriented songs that you could sing almost, and turn them into film score. And I think that's part of the reason why, you know, we really wanted to do this show is because, you know, when you watch the movie, the songs are embedded in it in a way that experience them a certain way, but they really do kind of hopefully stand on their own. And we wanted to be able to, you know, do that. You really experience music the most when you play it live and hear it live. And so to do that with the songs in the film, we feel like is really going to be something powerful.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. There is that thing with music and movies where you, if you check in with yourself while you're watching it, you wonder sometimes, what I'm seeing isn't making me feel this like soaring, crazy, heart-lifting thing. What's doing that? And you're like, oh, it's the strings. That's what's going
yeah.
on up there.
They're the secret weapon for sure.
In his review of the film, the late Roger Ebert wondered if it would have been possible or you know, he sort of meant worked so well without Quvenzhané Wallace. I imagine that what he saw and what audiences saw in her is what you saw sort of first when she auditioned.
Yeah, she is a special, special, special person. And she became the, you know, she became the grounding point for the film. And we had a film written, we had a, you know, everything was planned and written before we found her, but she was like introducing a planet into the solar system that changes the gravity of that solar system. You know, like everything, she became the sun and we started to rotate around her or something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So she really did fundamentally become what the film was. And, you know, it revealed itself more and more that the film was, you know, both an expression of this character Hush Puppy that, me and my co-writer, Lucy Alabar wrote together, but then was going to be transformed through this amazing little girl who was going to play her, and it was going to become something between the two. And I think that's what the film ends up being, very much an expression of.
How did you meet and begin to work with and want to adapt Lucy's play into this movie?
Me and Lucy met, all my stories go back to when I was 14 years old. It must have been a big year for me, but I think we met around the same time as when I first went down to New Orleans. It might have even been the same summer. I was 13 or 14 years old, and we won this playwriting contest where we got to sort of go to this two-week workshop. It was called Young Playwrights, and I just immediately loved what she was writing. I thought it was the funniest, most tough, funny. It was just tough, funny, incredibly heartfelt stuff even then. And from that point on, we didn't live in the same place, but we would send each other all our writing. And, you know, I always wanted to make something from the world of Lucy. And, you know, the way that it happened to be the first feature film was a real surprise and kind of happened through a series of coincidences. But, you know, it seems like that was what was meant to be.
A couple of weeks ago, I interviewed another alum from your college, Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't ask him, but I'm going to ask you, what is it about Wesleyan people? Why are you guys all such geniuses? No, I know that's something you can't really answer.
It's funny because, like, we didn't all know each other. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, there was a real, and I have no idea if it was like this before I was there or if it still is. But at that time, there was really a lot of very active artists that were working outside of our classes. You know, there was student theater that went up every week. I was writing plays, I was writing musicals, there were all these bands, and nobody necessarily knew each other, and we weren't competing with each other in any kind of aggressive way, but I do feel like there was a real sense that when you got out of class, you were going to work on your own art as hard as you could. And that was like a culture that really existed at the time I was there. And there were just kids in all kinds of weird pockets of the school just, you know, pushing themselves to you know, produce their own work. And I think that just that time, in retrospect, you know, a lot of people just really got a lot better by having such a vibrant culture around them.
Ben, it has been wonderful to speak with you. I adore the film, and I can't wait to see it with live score at Mass MoCA. Thank you very much for spending the time today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Ben Zeitlin, Dan Romer, and the Wordless Music Orchestra will perform the live score to Beasts of the Southern Wild, while a scoreless print of the film plays at Mass MoCA in North Adams, Massachusetts, this Saturday at 8:30 p.m. The event will take place outside in Courtyard C, weather permitting, and in the Hunter Center if the weather doesn't cooperate. To learn more, visit massmocha.org or beastsofthesouthernwild.com. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.